You, Jay, this is a wonderful event. I have never participated in one like this in terms of trying to apply this question of religious literacy and illiteracy to the profession. So delighted to have conversations here in terms of medicine and law in business. I've been tasked with asking a few questions, but before I do that, I want to just make a couple comments and pick up on something that Professor Ron Wright said. And I'm thinking of the word payoff, because last night I didn't say anything about how you can make money from religious literacy. And usually when I'm talking to students, I usually mention that. I was getting all kind of civic and public-minded last night, and I think I got caught up in it. And I neglected to point out that if you want to get into the business world, you can make more money if you know stuff about religion. So I want to pick up on that with a couple observations and then maybe with a few questions, with this sort of crass reality of religious literacy. I've had the experience of working on a few occasions with Fortune 500 companies that called me in for very strange reasons, where they wanted to make more money by consulting with me and give me money to consult with them about religion. One of them was a shoe company that had a customizable shoe online where you could go on and there were different, the computer program had divided the shoe into various parts, and you could customize the shoe. And then once you had customized the shoe to be sort of your perfect sneaker, you could post it and other people could buy the same shoe. And they had gotten protests from a Hindu group that didn't like the fact that Krishna was on shoes, on sneakers. Which, if you know anything about India, and especially about Hinduism, you know that the shoe or the foot is a dirty part of the body. You take off your shoes when you go into a temple. You take off your shoes when you go into a home. This is not a place for a god. It's like putting Jesus on the toilet seat, something like that. So they consulted with me about, you know, what should we do? We don't have this religious knowledge. You know, we want to continue this site. We want to make money off these shoes, but we need to know what kind of shoes, what kind of images can we have up there? And I said, well, you can't have any Hindu gods on your shoes. That's out. And then they said, well, what about Jesus? We have all these Jesus shoes. And I said, that's fine. That's no problem. So it's kind of curious. You know, it isn't like you just can't have religious imagery on shoes. You can have religious imagery on some shoes, some religious imagery, and you can't have imagery on other shoes. I also did some consulting with a fast food company who was being sued also by Hindus. I wonder if Hindus are more litigious. I'm not sure about this. But being also sued by Hindus about French fries. And this was a case where this company had shifted over to vegetable oil for their French fries. And they had made a big deal that we shifted over to vegetable oil. And some people concluded that because they'd shifted to vegetable oil, the French fries were now vegetarian, when in fact French fries had a very minor but nonetheless factual beef tallow something to make them taste better. So they weren't actually vegetarian. So they're being sued by these Hindus who said that they were going to have to be reborn 5 more times. I think that was the argument. Because they'd eaten these French fries. And this was a major spiritual problem for them, and they wanted to be compensated with money. And as that case was working out, they agreed to pay money to these Hindu groups, but what they agreed to do was to give to Hindu charities. So they were consulting with me about what Hindu charities should we give our money to, what Hindu charities would be consonant with our corporate values, and what Hindu charities aren't going to get us in trouble with the American public, and what Hindu charities are actually good charities to give to. So those are two examples in my own professional life where I interacted with, particularly with the business world, people who are trying to make money and realized that in order to make money and make more money, they needed to know something about religion. I also want to pick up on the comment about China and Confucianism, because it's a very interesting change I didn't talk about last night. It's going on in China, where communism is really dead as a functional ideology that might hold together the people of China. The culture has moved too far away economically and also politically from Marx and Engels and even Chairman Mao, so that communism really doesn't work to hold the society together. And leaders in China over the last decade have been looking around for a kind of religious or ideological or political belief system that they could use to give meaning to their politics and legitimacy to their politics. And increasingly they are indeed picking up on Confucius. And you know, Confucius in the era of Marx was this horrible person in China who was enforcing the old regime, who was opposed to revolution, who was opposed to workers' rights, etc. And that was sort of the anathema to the old Chinese Communist Party. But the new Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, is moving around so much toward Confucianism that there's now talk about how the CCP now means the Chinese Confucian Party. And you have all these leaders in China who are talking about harmony, and they're talking about Confucius, and they're establishing Confucian institutes. And so this really interesting political transformation that also has economic ramifications in China, where in order to do business or politics there, or indeed diplomacy, I would argue, you need to know something about the Confucian traditions. With that, I want to say something, pick up also on something that Professor Wright said about hermeneutics. And I have traditionally thought of religious literacy more in terms of knowledge than in terms of skills. And I think you're totally right that religious literacy is also about knowledge. It isn't just knowing the four Gospels. You never mentioned knowing the four Gospels, any of you, in your talks. But I think there is something that you learn in learning about religions that has to do, yes, with the reading of texts and the reading of the Bible. The way Americans historically have read the Bible has actually tracked fairly closely the way Americans have read the Constitution, for example. Right? This is not a different process. You know, when you can read the letter of it, or you can read the spirit of it, and it might, those letters and spirit might take you in a different way. So I'm intrigued about this idea that religious literacy doesn't just tell us stuff about Confucianism or Hinduism, but it might teach us, it might give us skills that might be useful in some way. So I think that's one question that I have for all of you is, what kinds of skills do you see as part of religious literacy that would go beyond knowing something about knowing something about the various religions? And maybe I'll just start with that question, and then I have a few more.
And at this point, I think we'll just use the microphones on the table, so anybody would like to speak.
And maybe I'll direct that not to Professor Wright, since you've already told us that, unless you have more to say.
I think once again, it enables you to relate in a more holistic manner. And I think that skill is really critical. And I think you need to understand the nuances even within religion. So if you think, for example, Iran is an Islamic country because it says it's an Islamic Republic. But the fact of the matter is that they are Shiites primarily and they're not Sunnis. And there are these kinds of issues that you need to recognize. So I also think that if you think about Hinduism as being one homogeneous whole, it's really not the case. And different parts of India practice Hinduism differently, and I need to know those differences if I'm a business person. So I would say that really getting a nuanced understanding of religion is very, very important to you, not a kind of a gross or a superficial understanding of religion. The other thing which I wanted to point out is if you look at the debate with respect to funding abortions and birth control, Planned Parenthood, in the healthcare field, and also about President Bush basically saying we can't do any stem cell research because it goes against our religious kind of beliefs. I think we really need to have a much deeper understanding of these issues to see how it affects various facets of business and life.
I agree with that. I think on an individual clinical level, the skill or attitude that's most important is an open curiosity, and not just to say, oh, I've got it, you're Jewish, I completely understand everything about you, but realizing that there's diversity within any particular group, and to have an open, non-judgmental attitude, I think. And just that curiosity of continuing to want to learn is so important.
Let me add one other. religions embody some profound insights about human psychology. The example I'm thinking of is the confessional for Roman Catholicism. And if you know something about religion, that tells you something about how human interaction is going to go. So if I'm a lawyer counseling a client, if I'm aware of the sort of background practices of the confessional, that's going to help me manage the interaction with my client, get more information. If I'm literate about the sacraments and the rituals of religions that tell me something about sort of deep human truths about psychology and interaction, I'm better at my job.
That's fascinating. Another question I have is this. It's sort of a basic question I was thinking as each of you was speaking about what is the number one in your field, what would you say is the number one danger of religious ignorance? In other words, what's the worst thing that can happen if you ignore everything you've heard the last couple days about the importance of knowing something about religion? What's the worst thing that can happen with religious ignorance? And what's the best thing that can happen with religious knowledge? What would you say is sort of the best and worst case scenarios?
I'll give you a couple of examples that come to mind quickly. And one of them is the ignorance that we had for a long time about practices like pointing to get evil spirits or evil humors out of the body of children who are sick with fevers. And based on our ignorance of that tradition, we thought it was child abuse when we saw kids coming in with bruises. And so these families went through these horrendous investigations and accused of horrible things and sometimes get separated from the families. And that's just really horrible based totally on ignorance. I think one of the good things that can come out of greater knowledge has to do with a good death. That if we ignore the spiritual side of human beings who are very sick, and we keep thinking the only important thing here is stamping out disease, and we keep pressing heroic measures when somebody really just needs to spend time saying I love you to their family, and I forgive you, I love you, I forgive you, I accept your forgiveness, please forgive me. Those kind of spiritual activities are so very important at the end of life, and if we're only focused on the disease, we've really missed the boat. And so I think if we step back and incorporate that in our attention, it allows people to have a more fulfilling end of life, and if we extend that back further, a more fulfilling life. When we did a survey last year of stress in nurses, and I've done a couple surveys now of goals that families have for health, and use the World Health Organization definition of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and social values, the number one thing that people pick are spiritual values. It may be that they still have a headache or back pain or something, but they really want to have love and kindness and forgiveness and meaning in their lives. That's much more important than almost any physical outcome. And I think often in medicine we miss the boat if we don't address those things.
Yeah. You asked for the worst thing and the best thing. I'm only going to do the worst thing, but I'll do two of them. So the first thing that occurred to me was there are huge deals that don't happen because people walk into the room ignorant, because they end up invoking concepts that they didn't really appreciate they were going to invoke, and people fail to reach agreement because nobody in the room knew how to be a translator. Nobody knew how to be a religious translator. But then I thought more about it, and I, you know, on the idea that human liberty is more important than money, then maybe the deal not going through is not the worst thing. Maybe the worst thing is a case of a criminal defendant who has a good explanation for what they've done, that is based in a religious tradition, and the jury might find that quite a sympathetic and understandable situation, but the lawyer doesn't know enough to explain it that way to the jury, and so the person ends up being convicted and losing years worth of their liberty because somebody failed to represent them to the rest of the world, to be their ambassador, to explain what they were doing in the context that they were coming out of.
In the business case, I think the worst thing is that you can really not function in the environment in which you're operating. And the best case is really that you become such an integral part of the environment that people forget that you are something separate from them. So I think that would be the best case.
Okay. Okay, good. One last question is coming to my mind, and we want to have time for questions from you all. So I'll just ask my one last and we'll go on. It's a little, maybe slightly tangential, but as you were just speaking, Professor Wright, I was thinking about the Pope's effort to intervene in this capital punishment case today. And I wonder what you, this may not be precisely on religious ignorance or religious illiteracy, but what do you think of efforts by religious leaders to intervene in the legal system of America and to say our tradition says this man should not be executed? Do you think that's a legitimate intervention of religion into the field of law, or should that be something that is out of bounds?
I guess I feel the same way about that I feel as I feel about politicians invoking religion, and that is, it's healthier for all of us if you frame it in terms that are accessible to both believers and non-believers. So if the Pope just comes in and says, I'm the Pope and this is a bad idea and that's all you need to know, that's not terribly helpful. But if the Pope says, you know, here are some long traditions that many of the citizens of Georgia share, and it connects with values from other, you know, religious traditions, and, you know, people outside my faith can, you know, appreciate this line of reasoning, you know, I think it's very helpful to hear from, you know, from religious leaders. And in fact, the legal institutions are built to hear that. So they are, you know, the legal standards are written in a way that accept input from just general expressions of moral outrage and moral deliberation. So, you know, we're designed to hear that, and so I think it's appropriate that somebody